quick one before we start. You know what's a fun surprise? Getting to your child's school meeting completely unprepared because nobody tells you what to ask. I've got guides for that. School advocacy, NDIS, meltdowns, diagnosis, medications, all there, www.adhdmums.com.au/resources. Paid ones, free ones, all there for ADHD mums. Okay, let's get on with it.
Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Have you ever thought, is it just me? Because this is where we say the quiet things out loud. No fixing, no fluff, just the stuff that you wish that someone had explained sooner. I'm Jane and let's get into it.
A friend came over the other day. She'd been on the Sunshine Coast for a week with her kids. And she came and visited me while she was here. Her kids are 12, 8 and 7. And we were sitting at my kitchen table and we were doing that thing where you're both kind of laughing and kind of crying at the same time. She'd stayed on the Sunshine Coast, done all of the pack up, all of the setup. She was emotionally cooked after that week. She was keen to get home and keen to pack up. She couldn't stand her kids fighting, so she gave them their iPads. As she's trying to get out of the apartment, she says, "Hey, I just need you guys to put the bins out." They all knew exactly where the bins were and exactly how to do the job, but she couldn't get them to help her. She could not get them off their iPads to help her do the one thing in the pack up on the trip that was for them. And yes, she could have stood her ground. Yes, she could have had better boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. This friend had zero capacity left. She was on the last day of her trip, just wanting to get home. And she was hoping that her kids might give her a hand. And she was devastated when she came to my house and said, no, they actually didn't help her at all. And I sat there listening to her going, yep, same. In the December, January Christmas holidays, I relaxed the iPad rules. I can hear the mistake even as I say the words. I work from home and my kids were hands down refusing to go to vacation care. One of my kids referenced that I would have to kill him and take his dead body out of the car and drop it off, and he would lay there for the entire time. All three of them banded against me and said they are absolutely not going. Then, of course, they added in every single incident of bullying that they could ever imagine and probably made up, who knows, just to make sure that I didn't stand my ground and make them go. So I had a choice. Do I not work for that entire period? Or do I work with three kids in the house who, if I left them to themselves, will physically fight each other every 20 minutes. So I made a choice. I talked to the kids and I let them know, you will have to go to vacation care unless you can let me work for periods of time during the day. Yes, we can do things, but my expectation is that when I'm working, I'm not breaking up fights every 20 minutes. They assured me that would be fine. Again, I can hear the mistake as I say the words. So what did I do? I relaxed the technology rules. I can hear the mistake even as I say the words. My three children, who can get along doing no activities at all, for some reason started playing Minecraft together on the Nintendo, the three of them. And they were actually playing as a team. They built something. They were talking to each other instead of hitting each other. I thought, wow, is Minecraft a really positive way for them to build a team? It's not like they're sitting on the iPad glued to it all day. They're actually interacting and doing creative work. So I relaxed the technology rules and let the kids know if they were not able to let me work for parts of the day, then they would have to go to vacation care. And I was trusting them and they promised me that they had it sorted. And for the first 3 or 4 days, I sat at my desk thinking to myself, is this working? Is this actually teamwork? Is this okay? Or am I lying to myself because I really need to send these emails and get this stuff done? And I genuinely could not tell. However, fast forward now to May. We have always had the rule in our house that we don't do iPads on the weekdays. However, since I relaxed the technology rules, my boys particularly, who are 8 and 7, when they come in the door from school, the first thing they do is reach for their iPad. The teamwork Minecraft days are long behind us. They've had plenty of blow-ups since that honeymoon period. And I can barely get them to say hello. And I had to say to them this week, and I felt 100 years old saying it, I don't want to have to justify to you why you should get off your iPad. That is not something you have all the time. And then I have to justify why I need you to do something. You get off briefly and then you go back on. You don't get to walk in the door and go straight to it. We are a team. We sit at the table for dinner at least sometimes. We use knives and forks at least sometimes. We talk to each other at least sometimes. And it is draining. It is so draining. iPad use is just one of the most talked about and difficult to navigate issues for mums these days. And sometimes when I sit on the couch after I've finally got them off the iPads, I feel like a bad mum for letting them on the iPads at all. But then I also feel like a functional human at the same time, where I actually had to have a shower. I actually had to do the lunches. And I genuinely do not know which one is winning. But the point that I keep coming back to is our mums didn't have this problem. They didn't have to negotiate with me about an iPad in 1990. Mums back then didn't argue with us about screen time. There's three things that have completely changed about parenting in the last 40 years that nobody has updated us on. And I think they explain a lot about why I'm sitting on the couch on a Saturday morning carrying guilt that I'm not sure I should be carrying. The first one, depending on how old you are, changes your experience slightly. A lot of kids that grew up in the 80s spent 6 to 8 hours a day completely unsupervised outside, riding bikes, at the park, at a friend's house, on the street, no phones, no contact, for maybe 10 hours. That was not uncommon in the 80s. When we talk about it takes a village to raise a child, yes, agreed. But this point here isn't even having a village. This isn't that the kids were at the grandparents or the neighbors. A lot of the time, kids were largely unsupervised. And it was considered normal and safe. If I sent my kids out on the road from 8 o'clock in the morning till lunchtime or 6 p.m., regardless of all of the safety risks, that would be seen as bad parenting, unsafe, risky. Someone would probably call child safety about it. You just can't do that nowadays. There's a woman called Lenore Skenazy, and she's done a heap of work on the collapse of the unsupervised childhood. I'm going to put a link into the show notes. And her whole point is that childhood hasn't suddenly become much more dangerous. But the expectation around supervision has definitely changed, massively, sharply. The stranger danger panic in the 90s definitely started to change things. And as we went through into the 2000s, it became a lot more commonplace to have two working parents, locked doors, no street play. And we really went quite quickly from eyes off for most of the day to eyes on all of the days. Now, this is not a small shift. This is a complete restructure of what parenting actually involves. If we had school holidays and I could just send my kids out on the road for 10 hours, it would be easy, wouldn't it? Sometimes I reflect on these points when I sit on the couch on a Saturday morning with a cup of tea. I give my kids the iPads so I can have my cup of tea. It is one of my only things that I do for myself. We live on acreage and I like to sit out with my cup of tea, look at the bush and just get pepped up, particularly on a Saturday when we have multiple sports all over the Sunshine Coast at different times, different locations. That 20 minutes with my cup of tea and no one speaking to me is like my battery. I cannot charge my battery without the iPads because I will be interrupted at least 40 times, probably in that 20 minutes. So if we reflect on the 80s parenting where kids were unsupervised outside for, let's say, 6 hours a day. Our mums got that for free. We don't get that at all. I have to reflect sometimes that I'm replacing the 6 hours a day in my mum's generation that they got off the clock with an iPad to basically let me have some sort of break. Our parents, depending on how old you were, got that for free. But yet, we don't get that at all. I don't know anyone nowadays that has a street safe enough to let your child go out onto the street for that period of time regularly. If you do, please let me know what street because I'm coming. The second one, ADHD kids cost more energy to supervise. And I don't mean that in a they're harder, poor ass. If you have kids with ADHD, you must be exhausted, they're awful. I don't mean it like that at all. But what I do mean is that it's a measurable thing. There's research from Russell Barkley on parent-child interaction load in ADHD households. I'll pop it into the show notes. The short version of that is that parenting an ADHD child isn't one job. It's three jobs laid on top of one another. There is one, active supervision. where they are, what they're doing. Two, there's passive monitoring, listening, scanning, half watching from the kitchen. And then the one that nobody talks about, anticipatory regulation. And that's the part of your brain running a continuous threat prediction model. Where is this heading? What's about to escalate? Who's about to lose it? When do I need to step in before it tips over? Parents of neurotypical kids get to put that part down for hours at a time. Parents of ADHD kids don't. So when you say you're watching them constantly, you're not exaggerating and you're also not helicopter parenting where you're too involved and you won't let them fall and you're not doing resilience building because you're an overactive, anxious mum and you should just do a parenting course and suddenly be better. That's not it at all. Watching them constantly and monitoring them constantly is actually a requirement for a lot of families. And that part doesn't switch off for a lot of us very often. So the iPad doesn't lower the bar of parenting, but what it does do is it lowers the anticipatory regulation load to a level that a single adult can actually sustain. That is not a failure. It is incredibly difficult to parent at that level all day, every day. I don't know about you, but there was periods there when one of my children who's particularly hyperactive, he used to get up at 3:30 in the morning every single day and he used to go to sleep at 9 o'clock p.m. I know that sounds like something I should have really addressed. I addressed it with so many consultants and specialists and nobody could ever figure it out. He's now 7. He doesn't need a lot of sleep. He doesn't even get grumpy. He just goes and goes and goes. So for a period of time there, I would parent from 3:30 in the morning till 9 p.m. at night every single day. Three children, 3.5 years apart, monitoring them that many hours of the day. And then if I gave them an iPad, I would cop the guilt that I gave them an iPad at all. But that level of parenting doesn't sound like failure to me. Does it feel like that to you? There's actually no way that one adult can hold that level of parenting in a house without going under themselves. And for a lot of us, the iPad is one of the only periods of time where we can actually switch off without wondering that if we go into the kitchen for a second, will we come out and one of my kids has punched the other one's tooth out? True story, I did not make that up. And the third one, which is the one that I find the most interesting. ADHD brains need constant dopamine input. If they don't get it, the behavior starts to escalate. We know this. In the 80s, the input came from outside. The kids were outside for long periods, running around, climbing trees, kids next door, novelty, bikes, going to see who was home, playing pranks on people, playing sport together, and the world supplied that for free. But that input is gone. Most children are inside. A lot of us live in small places, apartments, small blocks. The kids don't necessarily have children that they know within walking distance. And if they do, the doors are locked. With the economy the way it is, I don't know many families that can sustain having one person at work and one person at home. Financially, it is a real struggle. Single mums, big shout out to you. Now, with this kind of setup, novelty, dopamine is something that a parent has to actually create themselves. That isn't something that the environment provides naturally. When you take the iPad away or you pull it away or you wrench it out of your child's hands if you need to, have you noticed that your child doesn't necessarily just go and play outside? The child doesn't just go and read a book. For a lot of us, the child escalates. The child says, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, on a repeat. They haven't even put the iPad down and they're already saying I'm bored. For a lot of us, the child escalates. And it feels for the child that there's nothing left, that the fuel ran out, dopamine ran out. Where is it? So when you're handing a child an iPad, it might be the only dopamine source that is available in the setup that you have at home, depending on where you live. Or if there is some kind of dopamine available, maybe it needs to be parent supervised. For example, a pool. A pool is great. Yes, there's dopamine, but you can't do the washing or you can't work or cook dinner with kids in the pool. You have to supervise them. So for a lot of us, the dopamine hits that are available require parent supervision, which is why it feels impossible sometimes to do anything when you have the kids. And this is all creating a picture of how we got here. If you compare the parenting today to the parenting in the 80s, we don't have a village. We don't have a street that the kids can go out and play on. But what do we have? An iPad, which for a lot of us, was the lifeline of sanity during COVID. But now in 2026, there is a lot of heavy emphasis on the iPads are the problem. And letting a child use an iPad is a reflection of bad parenting, air quoting, lazy parenting. And also at times, depending on who you're listening to, some people say that iPads cause ADHD, which, by the way, is completely disproven, because at the same time as people say that, they also say, why are so many women being diagnosed with ADHD now in their 40s? Why is that? Well, we didn't have iPads then, so it can't be the iPads. But it's the whole setup. And you might think to yourself, well, that's where the guilt comes from. Actually, the guilt comes from somewhere else. We are the first generation of parents who are raising kids with this technology in their hands from an early age. The first one. Our mums didn't have to make decisions about iPads. There is no generational wisdom about this. There is no, well, look, your nan did it like this and it worked out fine. There is nothing. Every previous generation of parents had at least some received wisdom from the people who raised them. Or they could reflect on what it was like for them when they were a kid. We don't have any of those reference points. Sleep, food, discipline, play, whether to let kids climb trees, whether to leave babies to cry. There is opinions, arguments, and grandmothers in the kitchen talking about how they did it back then. We don't have any of that. Pediatricians are making screen time recommendations based on guesswork, really. There are some studies, but they're only based on 5 to 10 year studies on technology that have only been in our kids' hands for 15 years max. The data doesn't exist yet for what this is doing long term. And it can't exist yet. The kids who are starting on iPads as toddlers haven't grown up yet. They're still in school. A lot of the guilt, I believe, comes from the assumption that you should know what the right amount is. But nobody knows what the right amount is. Nobody knows. And when nobody knows what the right amount is, for an ADHD brain, we never shut off the guilt or the decision making. I take it away during the week, give it to them on the weekends, and then I wonder about that and go back on it. We have creeping boundaries. We are unsure because we don't know. So we aren't parenting badly, air quoting. We are parenting first. We are trying to parent today, in our body, with our children, with today's situations that we need to deal with. And the people whose whole job is to study this, they don't even agree with each other. I recently looked up all the research because I wanted to have an understanding for my own children. What is the right amount of screen time? What does the research show? I'm so sick of coming up with a decision, having my kids just ride me and ride me and ride me, and then eventually I go back on it and change to another thing. And we go around and around and around. And I thought, no, I'm going to research this properly, and this is going to be the guidelines, and this is what we're going to do. And from a massive amount of research, what I can tell you is that all of the research conflicts and none of it makes sense. There is a researcher called Jonathan Haidt, and he wrote a whole book saying that screens are destroying the generation. He thinks that we're at a mental health crisis driven by phones and social media, and his data is genuinely concerning. However, Pete Etchells, who's a researcher in this space, has written a whole book saying that the panic is overblown and the science doesn't actually support most of the claims being made. So after I reflected on all of the research and decided at the end of reading all the articles that I really didn't know and I wasn't sure who I agreed with, and there really was not a strong view that I held either way after reading it all, I thought, don't worry, I'm going to go to the American Academy of Pediatrics because I know that it always has great recommendations based on the research. However, I did notice that the American Academy of Pediatrics changes its screen time recommendations every year or so. That was concerning because they don't seem to really know or have anything that they stick to. The Australian guidelines say one thing. The World Health Organization says another. I checked out the Royal College of Pediatrics in the UK, and it came out recently and said that the evidence for having hard limits on screen time is actually weaker than what people think, which also spun me out. If you have a look at some of the commentary from the researchers, they fight each other publicly all the time. The recommendations contradict each other, and the guidelines keep moving, which might be a reflection of why my parenting guidelines keep moving too. The only consistent piece of information that I can find around screen time is that people will tell you that you're doing it wrong regardless of what you do. You are effectively guessing, and the people that are telling you that you're wrong are probably guessing as well. You go to one pediatrician, they tell you something different. You go to the other pediatrician, they tell you the opposite. So we need to make decisions on screen time for our children when the people whose life's work, who are actually paid to make these decisions, can't even agree on the right recommendation. However, the thing about guilt and mum guilt is that guilt really only works when we have information to act on. You know, for example, if you know that your child is being bullied at school and you are feeling guilty that you haven't done as much as what you wanted to do, as an example, that only works because you know that your child is being bullied. If you don't have the information that your child is being bullied, you can't feel guilty because you didn't know. Or if your child comes and says to you, "Hey, mum, I've been bullied for the past year. This is how I'm feeling about it." You can't feel guilty because you didn't know. Although mum guilt, you might feel guilty that your child didn't feel that they could tell you. We always find a way to find mum guilt. But we can't be guilty about something that we have no information on. But yet with screen time, because of the amount of information out there, I think we have the information, but we're doing it wrong. But the information out there is inconsistent, and I don't believe anyone knows. So are we behind? Are we not doing parenting right? Is there something that we are not doing? No, I think it's the opposite. I think we are in front of this one, actually. Nobody else has done this yet. We are parenting first in the situation we are actually in. On Saturday mornings that I know I'm about to back up 6 hours, for example, of driving, managing a team, carrying all the things, packing up, driving from one place to the other. On the Saturday, if I need to have a cup of tea for 20 minutes uninterrupted to charge up my battery so I don't lose my shit during the day, I'm going to give the iPad because that makes sense to me. And I invite you to look at your own life and your situation and release some guilt where you can. Yes, I'm going to still work within what I believe is right. I'm still going to try and limit the iPad time. I'm still, no matter what I do, going to feel weird about how much they're on it and guilty at the same time. But I'm done with the version of guilt that assumes that I should know better, or that the person telling me that I'm wrong actually knows something that I don't, because they don't. Nobody knows better. Not the pediatricians, not your mother-in-law, and not my friend down the road that also tells me everything else I'm doing wrong. Nobody knows. So I'm back at the kitchen table with my friend, the one who couldn't get her kids to put the bins out. And we're still kind of laughing, we're still kind of crying, but there's a difference now. Maybe the joke is on the system that pulled every single support structure out from underneath us all, handed us the iPad, and then blamed us for using it. Send this episode to a friend who needs to hear it, or the mum at school who's been giving you the side eye about giving your toddler the iPad in the car because they won't stop screaming. Or to the version of yourself at 9 p.m. who's wondering if you've ruined your children because you've given them the iPad instead of yelling at them. You haven't. You are not behind on parenting. You are actually on front of it. Nobody else has done this yet, and we are learning together. Until next week, thank you so much for listening.
That's today's episode. Thank you for listening. If you want that same podcast energy in a reading form, the ADHD Mum Shop is there on the website. See you next week.